The tragic bombing in Manchester, England is our topic right now, and the overall threat of radical Islam. We're going to talk about this with Robert Spencer, who's a returning guest to Vocal Point. Robert Spencer is the author of many books on Islam, best-selling books, I should say, and he is maintaining the website jihadwatch.org. Robert, welcome back to the program.
Hey, great to be here, Jerry. Thank you.
Sure. You know, it seems like every time we talk, maybe every few weeks or something, there's always some tragic new attack that's going on somewhere in the world at the hands of jihadists.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, this is just something that's going to be more and more common, as even Western leaders have assured us. You may recall that recently the Muslim mayor of London said that we're going to have to just get used to jihad attacks as part of life in the big city. And a BBC reporter right after the Manchester attack said the same thing. This is just something that we're going to have to get used to, which appears to me to be a council of despair. They ought to be saying we can and must fight back against this. And I hope that we will eventually have Western leaders who will say such a thing.
You know, going back 30, 40, 50 years ago, yeah, there were occasional terrible things. There was that, okay, there was the hijacking of a TWA. There was the old man who was thrown from a ship in his wheelchair because he was Jewish by some Islamic jihadists and so forth. But there weren't these regular occurrences, you know, these killings of different people. It didn't seem to be on the same level. Am I wrong? Or
no, Jerry, you're absolutely right. And one of the primary reasons why this has stepped up to such a degree in the last few years is because of the immigration policies that have been pursued by our own leaders. Mm. Now, it's not only that, because before that, the Saudis still had billions of dollars and were using them and still are using them to encourage jihad terror, to spread the jihad ideology around the world, and to keep their to replace the cultural forms of Islam that had taken hold in many parts of the world with a much more virulent form that is much more aggressive and violent. And
yeah.
Now we're bearing the fruits of that. But it's also primarily because there are just simply more Muslims in the West, and wherever there are more Muslims, everywhere this has happened in human history, wherever there get to be large numbers of Muslims and those numbers increase, there is conflict with the non-Muslim population.
Even going back to 632, the death of Muhammad.
Absolutely.
Moving to the present. Okay, one thing about the Manchester bombing that's striking, among other things, is the fact that there were a lot of young people that were the targets, it seemed. I mean, this was a young person's concert, as I understand it. By the way, I never even heard of Ariana Grande until this whole incident. And here I find out she lives about 20 to 30 minutes north of where I live. But young people.
Go here and explain to her exactly why what happened. But in any case, Jerry, I think that this was a quintessential example of Muslims acting upon the Quranic imperative, strike terror in the hearts of the enemies of Allah. That's chapter 8, verse 60. What better way to strike terror than to kill our children and to kill them when they are out just trying to have a pleasant evening?
Yeah, so, okay, give us more details. What do we know about who carried off this attack? What was he affiliated with? I understand that his backpack or whatever, the bomb that exploded, had nails and nuts and bolts or things like that in order to tear into people's flesh to cause as much damage as they could.
Yes, that's quite right. And his name is Salman Ramadan Abidi, and he is already now he has been joined by his father and his two brothers, his immediately younger and immediately older brother, but all of whom have been arrested, and there are ties between all of them and Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. And so it seems as if this was a terror family, a real crime family that was deeply invested in jihad terror in Libya and in the UK. And the UK authorities have said this was part of a network, so probably there are even more people who are not immediate family members who were involved in plotting this attack who are still at large.
And I understand that there are perhaps a few thousand such jihadists in Great Britain alone?
Yeah, that's right. It was announced not long ago that there were 3,500 active jihadis walking around in Britain. The British authorities constantly have to make evaluations as to which of these jihadis they need to watch closely and which they can afford to let go a bit. Wow. And they made the wrong choice with Salman Ramadan Afidi. They thought he was not an immediate threat. And clearly he was. Yeah. But there are plenty of other people who they think are immediate threats, who they think are even more dangerous than this man who just killed 22 people and wounded 59, who they're keeping an eye on. And one of the strangest aspects of this story, besides that in itself, is that many of these jihadis who are in walking around Britain have been trained in the Islamic State. They went to Syria and Iraq and joined up with the Islamic State, or ISIS, and then they returned to Britain because they're British citizens. And I just find that astonishing. I still can't get my mind around that. The thing is this, Jerry. The Islamic State, ISIS, it's an entity that considers itself to be at war with Britain as well as with the United States. They have made that clear in no uncertain terms many times. They are at war with us. And so imagine if it's 1942 and you have a bunch of people from Britain and they go over to Germany because they're Nazis and they join the Nazis and fight against the British. And then they decide to go home. Do you think the British government would have let them come right in and just go about their business because they were British citizens?
No.
Of course they wouldn't. It would have, the very idea would have been absurd. It was clear then, it would have been clear to them then, that these people were enemy combatants who should not be welcomed back. But now they've come back and they are set to wreak havoc. These are ticking time bombs in Britain. Nobody said these people should be stripped of their citizenship for joining up with an entity that is at war with Britain, but that's what they should have said.
Wow. Okay, so tell us about the details of the attack as much as you know from Tuesday night, what was it, May 22?
Yeah, it was, Monday night. And,
oh, Monday night, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Monday night, May 21st, I believe. But in any case, the thing about it is that Salman Abidi decided to maximize the carnage. What he was doing was he set the bombs to go off right as people were going out of the place after the concert, so that there would be in not only the people who were in the place, but the people who were coming to pick up people who were preteen and might not be able to drive or might be considered to be at risk riding on the trains by themselves or the buses. So he, in other words, picked the time when there was the largest crowd possible, when people were streaming out. It was a terrible scene with the bombs going off. And you're talking about little girls, you know. You're talking about preteens. And the screaming and the carnage was just horrifying, really. This, as I said before, this was perhaps the quintessential example, going back to the Beslan massacre of children in a school in Russia about 13 or 14 years ago. This was the quintessential example of striking terror in the hearts of the enemies of Allah, as the Quran demands.
Did this Abidi fellow, he was there and then he detonated a bomb, killing himself and then all these other people, or did he somehow plant the bomb and then leave?
Well, it's a little bit unclear right now. There's some confusion because there was more than one bang that was heard.
Oh.
And so I think that the best guess right now is that he did set off some other bombs, but that he did blow himself up with one of them on purpose. After all, the Quran promises paradise to those who kill and are killed from Allah. For Allah, that is.
Yeah.
And so if you kill and are killed for Allah, you go straight to paradise, whereas there's no other assurance of salvation in the Quran. So that's a very powerful appeal for a lot of people. And Salman Abidi claimed it that night in the Manchester arena. He had himself killed while he was killing infidels, guaranteeing his reward from Allah.
Wow. By the way, I understand that their understanding of the reward is 72 virgins up in heaven, and yet one of the translations of the Quran could actually be more accurately translated, not virgins, but rather raisins. And, I mean, if that were true, that would be even more ironic.
Absolutely, Jerry. The whole thing, as a matter of fact, a great deal of the Quran has a substratum that is a... was originally a Christian text, and there are quite a few traces of the Christian origins of much of the Quran. I wrote about this at great length in a book a few years back I wrote called Did Muhammad Exist? which looks into the obscure origins of the Quran and Islam in general.
Well, wait a minute. You're not blaming Christianity for Islam, are you? No.
No, not at all. The noxious, the violent elements of the Quran and Islam are the only things that are new and original. You may recall that Pope Benedict XVI a few years back got in considerable trouble and aroused a lot of controversy, and there were riots of Muslims around the world because he quoted a 14th century Byzantine emperor, Manuel II Palaiologos, saying that there is nothing new or original in what Muhammad has brought except what is evil and inhumane.
Ooh.
And actually, if you study the origins of Islam, that's actually true. There are plenty of things that are taken from Judaism and Christianity, and some things from other religions as well, Zoroastrianism most notably. And there are some things that are perfectly reasonable things, like that you should pray often during the day and so on, that nobody would have any quarrel with, apart from perhaps the content of the prayers themselves. And then there are these elements like make war against the unbelievers and kill them and behead them and so on and so on. Those are the new and original things. But the things that are rather commonplace elements of morality or spirituality are all shared with or taken from Judaism and Christianity.
Hmm. Well, the young person, the lady that was doing the concert, she sent out a tweet how she's broken from the bottom of her heart. She's so sorry. She doesn't have words. She flew back home. Apparently, she's here back in South Florida, just absolutely devastated. And again, this idea of targeting young people is just shocking. Now, you've mentioned the part about the fact that, you know, the Quran teaches to strike terror in the hearts of the unbelievers. I read in another interview where I guess it was KLM, the guy who was one of the masterminds behind 9/11.
And KSM, Khalid Sheikh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, KSM. You're right. And he made the remark that, look, even if we kill kids, that's fine because these kids are going to grow up to be crusaders. In other words...
Yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, the Islamic State issued a statement just yesterday saying that they had killed 30 and wounded 70. Those numbers are a bit inflated unless the British authorities are deflating the numbers. But in any case, they said they had killed 30 and wounded 70 crusaders in Manchester. And I thought, you're calling these little girls who don't know about anything regarding the Crusades crusaders. But this shows that as far as the jihadis are concerned, this is a great struggle between Christianity and Islam. And that's how they see it.
I thought the Crusades ended around 1300 AD.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the last land that the Crusaders held was taken by the Muslim jihadis in 1291. And so the Crusades are long since just a relic of history as far as the West is concerned, but they're very much on the mind of the jihadis, who very much think that they are facing some sort of an organized Christian effort to destroy Islam.
Wow. Okay, now I was reading in this one source where it said approximately 850 people from Britain have traveled to Syria to fight in the conflict there. So these are the people that can be recruited for more jihad.
Oh, yeah, because these are trained, battle-hardened jihadis now. Mm. And several hundred of them have already come back, and they've been let right back in, which, as I explained, I think is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, okay, we have about a minute to wrap up. What can the Western leaders do to really, you know, get a handle on this?
Well, the Western leaders need to follow through on Trump's call in Riyadh when he was there and spoke to the assembled Muslim leaders from around the world, and he said, drive them out of your places of worship. The Western leaders should follow through on that and challenge the Muslim leaders in the West who are claiming that they oppose jihad terror and oppose ISIS and al-Qaeda and condemn things like the Manchester attack to follow through on their empty words with real action, so that their words aren't empty and show that they are teaching against this understanding of Islam in their mosques and schools, that they are reporting any sympathizers of ISIS and al-Qaeda to the authorities, that they're cooperating with anti-terror efforts and so on. And if they are not going to do these things, then that will also have to be treated as a law enforcement matter.
Wow. All right, Robert, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us again. Robert Spencer, jihadwatch.org, best-selling author on all things Islam. Thank you and all the best. God bless.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, bye-bye.